You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey folks, I have a couple of quick announcements as we kick off the new year here. I hope you'll help us fund our production costs for 2017 so I can keep providing you brand new podcasts twice a week. Show your support for the show by giving to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickassnews. Or click on the donate button at kickassnews.com. Whatever you can give is always appreciated and will help us keep going over here in 2017. I also want to ask you to take a brief listener survey so we can better understand you, our audience, and find advertisers who are best matched to your interests. Just take 5 minutes to go to podsurvey.com/kick and take the survey. And when you're done, be sure to register to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Again, that's podsurvey.com/kick. Thanks for listening, and now enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass News. Well, folks, it's a sad week for clowns. Well, unless you're a clown named Donald Trump. But if you're not, you probably drew a little blue tear on your made-up face when Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Greatest Show on Earth, yes, you're supposed to say the full name, announced their intentions to pack up their tent and close for good after 146 years of entertaining the world. But it's been a rough year in general for clowns. Movies and television continue to demonize them as monsters, serial killers, and creepy pedophiles instead of joyful pranksters and merrymakers. And then there was the real-life clown hysteria of last fall, when more than 24 states reported incidents of clowns doing things like walking around a suburban neighborhood wielding a baseball bat or trying to lure little children into the woods. Most of those turned out to be hoaxes, but at least 7 people in Alabama faced felony charges of making terrorist threats connected to, quote, clown-related activity. But let's be honest, folks. If something as innocuous as a guy with a red nose and a seltzer bottle paralyzes you with fear, you're probably not emotionally equipped to survive among the general population anyway. My parents used to take us to the circus every year. Oops, I mean the Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Greatest Show on Earth. And I loved the clowns. In fact, when I was a kid, my parents once hired a clown for my birthday who had one leg. True story, one-legged clown. Now, did 5-year-old Ben run back in the house and cower under his bed? No. 5-year-old Ben had a blast. 5-year-old Ben got a balloon animal and jokes and magic tricks, and it was great. So don't fear the baggy pants and the big shoes. Embrace the noble buffoon, the painted jester. For in their exaggerated way, clowns express the fullness of human experience. Joy, melancholy, love, aspiration, friendship, heartbreak, and most importantly, laughter. Nowhere is this better portrayed than in the hilarious and heartfelt television series Baskets, which returns for Season 2 tonight at 10/9 Central on FX. The comedy from co-creators Louis C.K., Zach Galifianakis, and Jonathan Kreisel stars Galifianakis as Chip Baskets, a classically trained clown who gets thrown out of a prestigious Parisian clown school when he runs out of money and has to return home and take a gig as a rodeo clown in Bakersfield, California. The show co-stars stand-up comic Martha Kelly as a brilliantly deadpan insurance agent infatuated with Chip, and comedian Louis Anderson in a dress in his Emmy-winning role as Chip's mom, Christine Baskets. Louis Anderson is a 3-time Emmy-winning actor, a best-selling author, and one of the country's most recognized and adored comedians, named by Comedy Central as one of the 100 greatest stand-up comedians of all time. Since his 1984 television debut on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, he's appeared on Leno, Letterman, and on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, as well as Comic Relief and many Showtime and HBO comedy specials. He hosted the legendary game show Family Feud and earned his first 2 Emmys for his long-running, beloved children's animated series, Life with Louie. He's also made many guest appearances on sitcoms like Will and Grace and memorable roles in films like Coming to America and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Today I'll talk with Louie about starting out as a joke writer for the king of the one-liners, Henny Youngman, coming up as a young comedian in the heyday of the legendary Comedy Store, getting his big break on the Johnny Carson Show, and some advice for aspiring comics. He'll also reveal which of his family members inspired the character Christine Baskets. He'll discuss the perils of wearing a dress and how it's made him appreciate women even more. But first, I'll talk with his co-star Martha Kelly and the Baskets showrunner Jonathan Kreisel. Jonathan Kreisel is the co-creator, executive producer, and director of both FX's Baskets and also IFC's series Portlandia. For his work on Portlandia, Kreisel won a Writers Guild of America Award, a Peabody Award, and 9 Primetime Emmy nominations. He recently served as the executive producer of FXX's Man Seeking Woman, and he's also worked on the Adult Swim series Tim and Eric Awesome Show and Comedy Central's Kroll Show. Martha Kelly is an Austin-based stand-up comedian who's been featured on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, Comedy Central's Premium Blend, Last Comic Standing, and The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. She's had her own stand-up comedy special on Comedy Central and appears this year on Comedy Central's The Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail and on the big screen in Spider-Man Homecoming. She'll talk about her experience coming up in the Austin comedy scene, how she almost passed up the part of Martha on Baskets because she didn't have the acting experience, and how Zach Galifianakis and Jonathan Kreisel changed her mind. And Jonathan will discuss why oftentimes he prefers to work with non-actors. He'll also talk about collaborating with Louis C.K. and Zach Galifianakis, breaking through the audience's expectations, the art of deadpan comedy, and, of course, creepy clowns. Coming up with Martha Kelly, Jonathan Kreisel, and Louis Anderson in just a moment. Today I'm sitting down with Martha Kelly and Jonathan Kreisel. Jonathan is the director, executive producer, and co-creator of Baskets on FX, and Martha brilliantly plays the character of, well, Martha on Baskets. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, I am such a huge fan of Baskets. One of the things on the simplest level that I love about it is that it sort of restores the clown as something joyful and lovable instead of something sinister. Did the two of you grow up liking clowns when you were kids, or had pop culture already kind of ruined it for you?
Well, I didn't even think about the pop culture thing as a kid, but I never really liked clowns. I did like slapstick, though.
Yeah.
There's just something about the face paint that made me scared of it. With no connotation to it or any of that kind of stuff.
Right, right. Or John Wayne Gacy.
I don't know.
Okay.
I liked Ronald McDonald, but that's probably about it.
I wonder, when I first heard the pitch for Baskets, you know, Zach Galifianakis from The Hangover as a rodeo clown in Bakersfield, it sounded like a super high concept, zany comedy. And I kind of thought I knew what I was getting, but it turned out to be so much more than that and so rooted in humanity and real moments and characters that you actually recognize and you empathize with. Do you think it's taken time for audiences to get past their idea of what they thought this show was going to be?
Definitely. I think everyone had that same reaction, including the network. I think they were a little like, because when you pitch it, you know, you have an idea in your head of what it's going to be. And I don't, yeah, it's been a weird adjustment that I think it's also people pigeonholing Zach and thinking like, oh, we know that guy from The Hangover, but he's also the guy from Birdman. He's also this other character, so he could explore things in a broader way and in a more nuanced way. Mm-hmm. So we try to actually combine those two for the show.
Yeah, and it was pretty brave of FX to take this on. Was there anything after the initial pitch meeting where they said,
there was
where
no,
are we going with this?
There was no pitch meeting.
Oh, okay.
There was just Louis C.K. saying, I'm going to do a show with Zach. And you smartly just say yes, because that's a good pair.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're a co-creator of the show with Louis C.K. and Zach. What are they like to collaborate with?
Well, I would say that both of them are some of the smartest people I've ever met, and smart in a way that's obviously they're comedy. They know comedy, but they're smart people in a way that they have so much experience under their belt that they can, we can jump to this version of the show. We were all on the same page very fast. Very, like, everybody's working quickly in an outside the box universe because they have so much experience doing so much outside the box weird stuff.
Is it different than working on a show with, say, Fred Armisen and Kerry Brownstein in terms of the writing process?
Yes, it's different, but I will say that Zach, you know, comes up through the stand-up Largo, Los Angeles kind of scene, and Fred did as well. So there is a similarity, and it kind of came up in the 90s too, which I think influenced in Kerry too, in music came up then. There's a desire from that kind of 90s thing to do things that are really original and uncompromised. And maybe that idea has gone away a little bit. So I think everyone I work with is like, yeah, we're going to do something to just try to create something new and different and not be scared of that.
Yeah. And I was interested to read that, I guess, Martha, you said that you originally didn't want to do the show. And I guess Zach and maybe even Jonathan had to talk you into it. Was it just that you saw yourself more as a stand-up comic and not so much as an actor?
I definitely am not, don't see myself as an actor, but I don't feel like they'd talked me into it. I think it was that I thought I might talk Jonathan out of it when I met him. And then Zach was just always like, don't worry about it. It's just going to be fun. It's not a big deal. It doesn't matter what happens. It's just all supposed to be fun. Don't worry about it. And because of Zach and Jonathan, it I felt like I could at least try to do it. I still really thought I might get fired, and because I don't know what I'm doing, but but they made it like fun, and they made it worth the risk of possibly being humiliated by doing a terrible job. They made it seem like, well, at least I had fun doing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to ask, is the character a stretch for you, or is it pretty much how you are? And I guess that you've kind of, now that I've met you, you've kind of answered the question for me in terms of the delivery, at least.
Zach just said, when he first told me about the pilot, and I said, I was just afraid I would freeze up because, I don't have any experience. And, he said, just say, I said, I can't act. And he said, well, just say, I just want you to say the lines like you would say them if you were in that situation in real life. And so I tried to do that.
Mm-hmm. Which is actually really hard to do.
I wonder, Jonathan, is it part of the secret of the authenticity of Baskets that so much of the cast is populated by people like Martha who are not trained actors but stand-up comics, or I think as I read somewhere, even some total non-actors?
Yeah, a lot of that. I like working with non-actors. I like working with just authentic people. Mm-hmm. You know, you meet people who are just like different, interesting, have this charisma to them, but they might not act. And it's, can you bring that unique personality and just put it right on TV without modifying it or having them freeze up, which is hard to do, but it can yield some performances that you don't normally see when you learn your lines so perfectly and just kind of like, even you're putting emotion into them, they can just arrive so perfect that you kind of lose it. And when you see a performance that's full of imperfection, it's, you sit more upright and watch, because it's like, well, this is not 100% perfect.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Because I know
Martha's laughing.
It's more fun that way. It's more fun to watch for me. I think people are like a little bit like, whoa, we were told we were going to see professional actors like nailing these lines. And it's like, well, there's a great thing in the episode 2 of this season where Louis just starts coughing in the middle of the scene. And it is so funny because you never have seen a scene where someone just coughs for no reason. Yeah. It's not a plot point. It's just someone coughing in a scene. I love it. It makes me laugh because he's just like, why not? Real life has coughing in it.
Yeah.
Don't cut it out.
Yeah. I saw that you were laughing there.
Because I was imagining when Jonathan was talking that it was building up to him saying, people are watching it and they're like, wow, this is really terrible acting.
No, it's actually really good because it's very hard to do something that authentic. And I the great actors can do it and the non-actors can do it. Mm-hmm. But it's very hard in the middle to get to that point of that kind of raw real performance.
Yeah. And Martha, I almost feel like you sell yourself short when we talk about it, because I'll be honest, I happen to think that you are probably one of the all-time masters of deadpan comedy.
I agree.
I would put her up alongside Jack Benny, Bill Murray, Stephen Wright, even Peter Sellers when he wasn't doing Clouseau.
Yeah, Bob Newhart.
Yeah, Newhart. Yeah, all the greats.
And that's to me some of the funniest stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And Martha is really a master of her comedic skills. It seems like, oh no, this is just Martha. She knows what she's doing. And that's why it comes across so funny, because the character is just kind of, you know, picking up chips. She's kind of working at her job, but she's delivering the most jokes of any character on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the thing that I love about it is I feel like in this day and age, there's so much pressure to pack everything with jokes. Yeah. And I love that you resist that. There are, hilarious moments where I spit out my drink. It's so funny. But, you know, I think back to those days of like, It Happened One Night, or, you know, like I was saying, all of the Peter Sellers movies where he wasn't playing Clouseau, mm-hmm. where there were these very real human moments mm-hmm. that built up to the comedy. And I think that's incredibly refreshing about this show.
Well, I will say, like, for me, comedy, you know, like a horror movie, if you're going to get that scare, you have to kind of sneak it up.
So
sometimes a joke, you got to sneak it up on people so that it comes out of nowhere. It comes out of that person's mouth, or in that dramatic situation, they're going to put a joke in there. So, yeah, for me, when I watch something and I do actually laugh out loud, I'm like, that's super hard to pull off. I can generally be amused by certain things, but laughing out loud at home alone takes some mastery.
Yeah. I have to confess that I had never seen Martha's stand-up before I was preparing for this interview. Martha, you're hilarious.
Oh, thanks.
I was watching. I love it. There was one bit where you say that you've given up drinking, and now you have so much time for things like crying and cussing at strangers.
That's a true story.
Yeah, really.
That is what early sobriety was like. I would cried a lot, and then I'd go to the dog park and get mad at people and yell. Not all the time, but a couple times I yelled at people at the dog park.
And if I have this right, you're originally from here in LA, but you came up in the Austin comedy scene. Why Austin? Do they have a pretty thriving comedy culture there?
They do. Actually, right now, I think it's like the best it's ever been. They've got so many really funny comics there. Also, I think there are more people doing stand-up now, and there's more of a drive with young comics to be original rather than there was a period with stand-up where everybody was kind of trying to get the same rhythm on stage and confidence and relatability or whatever. And now it's like the young people, they all want to do their own unique thing. And it's such a fun thing to be a part of.
Yeah. And was it a conscious choice for you to leave LA to start your comedy career?
Well, I started stand-up here, and that's when I met Zach in 98. Okay. And then in 2000, I moved to Austin, partly because, really because it was more of a drinking town, and that's when my alcoholism was just getting revved up.
Yeah.
And it is a great place to go and drink all the time.
Yeah.
As well as...
Good to know.
So I've heard. Sixth Street and all that. See, I'm from Houston, and there's nothing funny about Houston. So
Houston is very LA-like.
Oh, really?
Don't you think? It's kind of flat.
I mean, if you like snakes and humidity and mosquitoes and rednecks, I mean, I don't know. Well, then maybe.
Yeah, it's green. I like Houston because it's a lot greener than Austin. It's a lot more lush. And
yeah, that it is.
Green, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, before we go, there's a line in the new season where Chip Baskets, played by Zach, says, "I don't think clowns are needed as much since the world became so clownish." Do I detect a larger implication, maybe even some political commentary?
Definitely. I think we wrote that and we shot that before the election, but it was, you know, the election was going on, and
it
has gotten a little cartoonish, the world. It's more broad than it seems like even this show. Like, the world is crazy.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
Every day it's like, who's writing this? Like, it's too much. There's always it's just the things that people are saying and doing are just like so outlandish.
Yeah, every comedian now says, how do I even make fun of this? It's already so funny.
But think on to put a positive spin on the terrible state of the world, what about back in the day when we were just coming out of the trees and being eaten alive by predators? Like, that was crazy too. Maybe the world's not getting worse. It's just crazy in a different way.
We could be running away from dinosaurs. Everything's relative, I guess.
Well, I just hope we don't all die.
On that cheery note, Martha Kelly and Jonathan Crystal, thanks so much for sitting down with me.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then when I come back, I'll talk with Emmy-winning comedian and actor Louis Anderson. When we come back in just a moment. So it's a new year now, and there's no better time to launch an online business or expand your online presence for your existing business, and GoDaddy.com wants to help. GoDaddy's mission is to radically shift the global economy toward life-fulfilling independent ventures, helping their customers kick ass by giving them the tools, insights, and the people to transform their ideas and personal initiatives into success. GoDaddy is the world's largest technology provider dedicated to small business and the largest domain registrar, with over 62 million domain names under management and big savings over other registrars. Their award-winning 24/7 support will help build your online business and give you everything you need to get up and running. Whether you have a new idea or an established business, the key to success online starts with a great domain name, and GoDaddy is trusted by 13 million customers. That's more than any other registrar.
And right now, my listeners can get a special discount on a GoDaddy domain if you just use my offer code KICK30 at checkout to get 30% off new purchases. That's GoDaddy.com and offer code KICK30 for 30% off. You don't have to spend a fortune on a domain. Just go to GoDaddy.com and type in the offer code KICK30 at checkout for 30% off and launch your online business today. So I was just talking with my mom about how she used to make these huge meals for the whole family every night. But now that it's just her and dad, it's way too much food and hassle for just two people. But then she told me she's been trying Blue Apron. They send complete, easy-to-prepare meals with fresh ingredients perfectly proportioned out for the recipe and the number of people, so there's no waste. Moms are picky about food, they know what's good, and she says their meals taste great. And here's the kicker. She swears they're so easy to make that even I can whip up a delicious home-cooked meal. So I'm excited that I just placed my very first order with Blue Apron. It's going to arrive right on my doorstep. In fact, they deliver to 99% of the continental U.S. And let me tell you some of the meals that I ordered for January, and I can't wait to cook these. Seared pork chops with farro and cranberry chutney, spaghetti squash and marinara with mushroom and garlic knots, spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage and furikake. I don't know what furikake is, but if it's from Blue Apron, I'm pretty sure it's going to be great. Their meals are fresh, delicious, and socially responsible. Their seafood is sustainably sourced. They use free-range chickens and natural pork and regenerative farming practices for their produce, which makes you feel even better about using Blue Apron. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/kick. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/kick. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And now, back to the podcast. Today I'm talking with comedian, actor, and best-selling author, and also three-time Emmy winner, Louis Anderson. He just won that third Emmy last year for his role as the mother, Christine Baskets, on FX's Baskets. Louis, thanks so much for sitting down with me.
You're welcome.
I'm a little bit excited because I didn't know this before, but before this interview I was reading up on your story, and am I right that you got discovered by Henny Youngman?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, yes and no. I guess, you know, he was at, I did a comedy contest and he said, you know, I was great. And then I wrote for him. He had a grandson who also, he wanted to become a comedian. So I wrote some jokes for him and we stayed friends. So yeah, in essence, you know, I would say Henny, Rodney, and Joan Rivers and Johnny Carson. They were really the people who were, you know, Louis Anderson fans in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jimmy Walker.
Yeah.
Also.
And, you know, I guess for anyone who doesn't know or anyone who's never summered at Grossingers, Henny Youngman, of course, was the king of the one-liners, the guy right. who said, take my wife, please.
Right.
How long did you write for him, and what was that like?
It was just for a year or so.
Okay.
It was an interesting experience because he would just go, now, yeah. No, yeah. He knew what jokes that would work for him or not.
Do you still remember what was the best one-liner that you wrote for him or your favorite?
Broad jump, killed her.
I love it. Now, I'm assuming this was toward the end of his life, right? Somewhere I once heard that Henny Youngman used to just show up at hotels and show up at wedding parties and offer for, you know, a couple hundred bucks to come in and entertain. Did you ever hear that?
Oh, yeah. No. I could see Henny doing that.
Yeah. Did you learn?
I will do that also just to have some of the cake.
Is that why you're at here at this hotel
parties.
Today?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought you were here for baskets.
But yeah, I'm here for baskets of stuff.
I wonder, did you learn anything from Henny along the way when you're writing for
him? Well, of course.
I mean, your comedy is very different than
his,
I feel. Yes,
but you learn you know, you can ask a million questions that I wouldn't be able to ask anyone else. I got to ask him all about, you know, Milton Berle and all the great comics he ever worked with, and Lenny Bruce, and You know, those were the things I liked talking about.
Yeah.
You know, I liked to know the stuff that was going on. What was it like? How was the road? You know, how were you treated? You know, what were the, you know, those kind of things. So
yeah.
He was good. He didn't like to talk too much. He never wanted to tell anything about anyone.
Really?
Because he was just that kind of, he was a good guy. He was a really good guy, Annie.
Did you grow up admiring comedians from that generation, the Burrells and the Young Men?
Well, more Jonathan Winters.
Oh, yeah.
Jackie Vernon. Yeah. Bob Hope. I was a big fan of Bob Hope.
Yeah. You almost Jack sound Benny a little like guy. Him, you know?
Yeah,
anyone
you
ever
know,
tell you
I,
that?
Hey, Joey Heatherton coming out in a minute. He had a wonderful thing that he did that I would agree that I could be a little like him that way. Henny Youngman did that. I mean, Bob Hope did it, and also Jackie Vernon was like that. But those guys from that are, hey, coming up next, stick around. You know, there was a lyrical, you know, thing to their voice.
A
and
lilt.
Then Jack Benny, though, as far as pauses and timing, he was my main influence.
Yeah.
And Johnny Carson, who, you know, was a student himself of Jack Benny, so.
Yeah. Yeah, now, when did you first get on Carson?
84.
84?
Yeah.
Okay, that was the heyday of the whole comic
boom, really.
That was really
boom, it, that
really.
80s.
Yeah.
80s comedy, you know, Johnny was the king. It's like being on, it's like winning America's Got Talent now.
Yeah.
Going
oh, yeah.
on that show.
Yeah.
The next night, you were, you know, famous.
Yeah, now did he invite you to the couch?
He did, he shook my hand, and then they went to commercial. So I didn't get to sit and talk with him, but he was so great to me.
Yeah.
He really took a liking to me, and I got to do lots of Tonight shows and a few of his anniversary shows.
Yeah.
I loved him.
Yeah. Now, what was he like? Because, you know, people always say that Carson was very withdrawn and you never really got to know the guy. But,
we didn't hang out together.
Yeah.
You know, you do the show, he's a professional, and then he'd be done with the show. And he would head out, and I would head out. So,
yeah,
you know, he had relationships with those some comics through all of his life. You know, David Letterman especially,
right?
And he called people and had a and he liked to play tennis. So he had a, you know, he was a creature of habit.
Yeah,
you know, he was the guy who gave so many comics a break.
Yeah, and I feel that people are kind of hard on him because they, you know, now that the poor guy's dead, you know, everyone says, oh, he was so withdrawn. He didn't really like people. And I feel like, you know, if I had that job, I wouldn't want to be socializing afterwards either.
Who cares what those people think?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, do you think Johnny ever gave that a thought?
Yeah.
I don't think he did.
Yeah, that's true.
I think he was just a shy person from the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was a...
Which you could probably relate to, coming from Minnesota.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big mouth, so I'm the guy. I'm not really a shy person.
Were you always like that?
I come from a loud family.
Yeah, what,
you're
you
either
have 11
in a loud
kids?
Family or you're in a not a loud family, right?
Yeah.
Were you in a loud family, right?
I was in a fairly quiet family.
Oh, were
I
you?
Think. Well, my
were
mom's quiet, kind of thing? Quiet. My dad is pretty loud.
So are you more like your dad then?
I don't know. I guess I'm a hybrid of them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, hopefully I'm a hybrid of the best qualities and not the worst qualities.
Yeah, it's never the case.
I don't think you
nice
get to choose,
try.
Do you?
Nice try.
Yeah, 11 kids. You must have had to fight for attention in a family that big.
You know, it was a 20-year span, so it's kind of laid out into three different families, the older, the middle, and the younger kids.
Yeah. Now, who are some of the comics that you came up with when you were first starting out?
Well, all the guys in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Richard Pryor was,
wow.
You know, he was in the he was at the, you know, pinnacle of his career when I got out there, and Howie and Robin and, you know, Sam Kennison and Dice and Jim Carrey and, you know, Roseanne and, I mean, there all these guys, all these people,
wow,
were tremendous. Tremendous comics, and you know, we were all friends. It's a small club.
Yeah. What was the Comedy Store?
Comedy Store. I was a Comedy Store guy more than an improv guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Who was the one that would just blow them out of the water when they came in?
You mean
aside
me?
From yourself.
Oh, besides me. You know, I think it was like one explosion after another a lot of nights. Eddie and Robin and Sam and me and Howie. I mean, we crushed that room. That's a crushable room.
Yeah, Dangerfield.
The original room.
Too?
Rodney hardly ever came in. He was working. He was a big star.
Yeah.
He'd stop by occasionally, but Rodney, he was our last iconic character comic ever.
Yeah.
He was the biggest star. He was making big money a long time.
Yeah.
That's how you know somebody's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was packing places.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think I was actually, toward the end, I think I saw him actually at the Comedy Store.
Oh, did
you? And he could still kill. He would just show up.
He'd just crush it.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what I mean? How you doing, kid?
Yeah. I want to talk about baskets, obviously. I'm a big fan of it. And, you know, I was thinking of this while we were talking about your family. I loved a book that you wrote a few years ago called Dear Dad, Letters from an Adult Child, in which you talk about your father's drinking and how later on, only then did you realize that the poor guy had been through all of this horrible crap in his life.
Yeah.
And I get a very similar feeling when I watch Baskets, because at the beginning of the season, you kind of start off thinking that half of these characters are total jerks. And then slowly, you know, they start to reveal themselves, and they're just people with disappointments and aspirations and hurt feelings sometimes.
That's really astute of you. I mean, you know, I don't know that people are always able to articulate that, but you're exactly right.
What you wrote about in the book with your father and realizing that, is that something that you draw on or that you kind of relate to with your character on the show?
I mean, the writers are so good, for one thing, and I'm working with such great people, Jonathan Kreisel, who's the director,
yeah.
But I think what I'm drawing on is the humanity of the character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I try to find the humanity in that character. I try to find the pathos in that character. I try to find the humor in that character.
Mm-hmm.
I try to bring that character to a place where that character can really twirl and reach for the top, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that you're right about those characters, because they are, and that's why they resonate so much, because you have three really complex characters in Martha and Zach and myself. You have three people who've had real lives, who are not the, you know, run-of-the-mill characters in comics out there.
Yeah.
We're all people who are fairly serious people. We're all people who think a lot, and we're all people who have, you know, a lot of charitable stuff behind us. And, you know, not that we want to talk about that, but I'm just saying we really do care about causes. We care about the good things. You know, we're all aware of how fortunate, and we're all humbled by the fact that we've had this great success, and that these are complex characters that are trying to work things out. And that the reason that people seem to be relating to it is because the world is sad a lot of times right now. And so they're trying to, you know, they're trying to work this sadness out. And I think that's what people relate to in the characters. So that was smart that you picked that up.
You say that you modeled the character of Christine Baskets on your own mom. What did you borrow from her?
All the nuances, all the looks, the purse of the lips.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That one particular thing Christine does, disapproving looks, and the complex nuances of her always looking like she's somewhere trying to fix the situation, trying to, you know, look back or look forward or look at the present. And so I think I try to bring it, like I go, I think I go back to, I think I'm trying desperately to find Christine's main humanity and also her complexity, you know, who she is, you know, her disappointments, her accomplishments. But I mean, mostly I think that I'm just trying to address the love that Christine has for her children and really for everybody. You know, Christine really does care about everybody.
Yeah, and that's one of the things when the show started, I initially kind of thought, wow, she's kind of a pain in the ass. she's not that nice of a person. But then as I was just talking with Jonathan, we were talking about this, how there's so much more to the character than you realize at first, which I think really draws people into this show.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I constantly...
Or not.
No. I was just, you know, I happened to just watch like four episodes. I was somewhere and the TV was on. It was on FX. And Baskets started coming on. And I started watching. I started watching it.
Yeah.
And I saw some beautiful work by my co-stars. And I saw some beautiful work by me. But I saw the episodes as a, you know, a person watching TV.
Yeah. That's cool. You can step back and appreciate it for what it is and not be too critical of yourself.
I really tried. Yeah, I really did. I really tried to like,
Yeah.
That worked. Well, kind of, you know, which is really nice.
Yeah. And it's a testament to your ability, I think, that when I watch it, I buy into the character of Christine because I completely forget that it's Louis Anderson in a dress.
That's my number one goal is that you... that I disappear in the part.
And you completely do. You really do. And is it a little like walking a razor's edge to play this character of Christine Baskets without coming off as some kind of a stunt like Milton Berle or you know, Tyler Perry doing drag?
Very difficult. Very difficult to... I know, you know, like I have those two red lines that are on the thing with the voting... where they have the things go up and down.
Yeah.
You know, to, and I know when I, where how high I can go because I am, it is a character that you have to play big in some ways.
Yeah.
But I have to keep bringing it down and play it small.
Yeah.
Because sometimes a small look or a thought or a glance or, a, you know, you know what I mean? Little.
Yeah.
Little things like that can mean so much when it comes to Christine.
Yeah.
And what I try to do is be fully engaged with... Were you there for the panel?
No, I wasn't really.
So there was a scene they showed. And so in that scene, I am looking through photos of the family. And I'm really doing it. I'm not... I mean, the scene...
Oh, I saw that episode.
I have the dialogue... Mm-hmm. But I'm making that up as I go along.
Yeah.
I know what I need to hit on.
Yeah.
But the main thing on that thing is to show her me as a little girl.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I just watched that character and I said, well, I did a really good job there because I never looked up very much, really. I stayed at my task.
Yeah.
You know?
And I wonder, you mentioned that Jonathan Winters was an inspiration of yours. Do you draw on a little bit of Maud Frickert there, maybe?
I think what I do with Jonathan in that, I mean, you know, when I is more of the, is more when I'm in my stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
The characters, the, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, more than that. But I think where I, the person I keep in mind always with my Christine character is my mom.
Yeah.
And when I get out of that comfort, I know I'm in the wrong character.
Yeah. Now, in the second season, your character is actually starting to address her health issues and work on exercise and dieting. Is that maybe something that you relate to a little bit more? And maybe you're drawing on personal experiences?
Because
I know you struggled with that. Yeah. And I think you were on a sprout diet for a while.
Was,
is that right?
Then the sprouts didn't sprout one day, and I just said, good.
Yeah.
I had some fries then. It is true. I was able to pull on that and am really concerned with my health. And so it was kind of like I had real feelings and real things about that. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see a lot of pretty emotional things from Christine this year and lots of thoughtful things. But lots of funny things, too.
Now, what's the worst part of dressing up like a woman?
You got to watch how you sit.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Got to keep
your legs
together.
Open.
Okay.
I mean, you really do. You have to watch how you sit.
Yeah.
You know? And also, you know.
That would kind of ruin the character.
You know, women, we kind of kill it for everyone. What? I think the big thing is you have to remember, you know, like, women go through a thing to get ready to look good.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to make sure you don't mess that up.
Yeah.
Guys just have to smell their shirt
yeah.
to see if it's okay to put on, you know?
Well, before we go, I just want to run a theory I have by you.
This is
something I run by every comedian that I have on the show. Somewhere along the way, I developed this idea that every person, not comedians, but every person should have to do a 5-minute open mic set. In my mind, I think it would be great to open your mind, make you more humble, see what you're good at, build your confidence, all that. Every comedian has shot that down and shit all over this idea of mine. What do you think?
Well, I mean, your purpose isn't to find more comedians.
Yeah.
Is it?
No. It's
so they must.
I think it would be therapeutic. Everyone else says really I'm insane.
Good. No, I think it'd be really good for people. Mm-hmm. It's like people should spend a year out of this country, too, to see how lucky they have it here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you travel, you go, oh, my God, America is so much. We have so much to be thankful for.
Yeah.
Definitely. But yes, I agree with you. Okay. I always tell people, what do you got to lose trying stand up?
Yeah.
You can't die from it. I said, give it a try. Well, I like your theory.
Okay, good.
And I think it should be a part of it, you know?
Everyone else acted like I was going to be emotionally damaged by it.
Here's all I'll ask you is, did you do it?
I haven't yet.
You should go do it.
Because all the comedians keep telling me not to.
The Lighthouse is right here.
David Steinberg, Gilbert.
Yeah. Well, those guys are scaredy cats.
Oh, okay. Okay. Any advice for me?
Well, just write down stuff they know about your family. It sounds like you have an interesting family.
Okay.
And you lived in a hotel for how long?
Probably about 5 years.
5 years. Don't you think there's a tremendous amount of stuff there?
Yeah.
You know, when you live in a hotel 5 years, you learn how to make a hell of a bed.
Yeah, it's like Fawlty Towers or something.
You should definitely try it. I expect by next year you try it.
I will, and I'll report back. I appreciate that. Absolutely. Right. I appreciate the
Sunday
encouragement.
Night sign up at the Comedy Store.
Well, Louis Anderson, I will. I will do that. I will drop your name. I'm such a big fan of your stand-up, your books, your writing, and Baskets, of course. Congratulations on the Emmy for Baskets.
Thank you.
I wish you the best with everything.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Louis Anderson, Martha Kelly, and Jonathan Kreisel for coming on the podcast. Season 2 of Baskets premieres tonight, Thursday, January 19th at 10/9 Central on FX Network. For more information, visit fxnetworks.com. And if you want to see Louis Anderson perform live, he appears this Friday at the Lafayette Theater in Lafayette, Indiana, and at the Belterra Casino Resort in Florence, Indiana on Saturday. And next weekend, he'll be doing shows in Bloomington, Illinois, Newark, Ohio, and Chicago. I'll post a link to all of his upcoming dates in the show notes and at kickassnews.com. Follow Louis Anderson on Twitter at Louis Anderson, that's L-O-U-I-E, or at louisanderson.com. You can follow Martha Kelly on Twitter at MarthaKelly3 or at MarthaKelly.net. And Jonathan Kreisel isn't on Twitter, but his other show, Portlandia, just kicked off their 7th season, and you can watch it on Thursdays at 10/9 Central on IFC. Don't forget to take our listener survey so we can keep the show free and find advertisers who are best matched to you, our listeners. Just take 5 minutes to go to podsurvey.com/kick and take the survey. And when you're done, be sure to register for that $100 Amazon gift card giveaway. Be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. You can like Kick-Ass News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at KAPolitics. And please be sure to recommend Kick-Ass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/KickAssNews or click on the donate button at KickAssNews.com. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.